Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The most important takeaway from this latest debt ceiling standoff is that there really is only one outcome, and it is one of fiscal tightening. The Republicans will not raise a debt ceiling without significant spending cuts. Of that, there is near 100% certainty. They would be thrown out of office if they did anything else. Now, maybe they will end up choosing in the end not to raise the debt ceiling at all. I mean, in the end, that's very, very low odds of that. I mean, these are politicians after all. Or perhaps they'll agree to raise it through the budgetary process at the end of September, which is the most likely scenario. That is the one I predict that will happen. But in any case, the amount of fiscal spending will decrease. The only real question is to what degree. I mean, not raising the debt ceiling, as I mentioned last week, is tantamount to a balanced budget amendment. I mean, that would be draconian tightening, and neither party would go for that. But even if or when a debt ceiling is reached, it will only get done again with trenchant cuts. This new fiscal tightening will get combined with quantitative tightening and the ongoing lagged effects of 500 basis points of rate hikes over the past year and change, and an incipient banking crisis. In other words, the tightest monetary policy in history is going to be combined with this new fiscal tightening. So please don't forget, in that context, that this is the most over-leveraged economy in history. And the interaction between onerous debt and aggressive fiscal and monetary tightening is not beneficial to asset prices in the long term. I get that it's not maybe for today, but it's not beneficial in the long term. I know you hear constantly from the deep state of Wall Street and their lackeys in the mainstream financial media that the banking system is healthy and there are no economic excesses to be unwound. However, here are some facts for you. Total non-financial debt is now 263% of GDP. It was 227% prior to the global financial crisis. So just a lot more nominal debt out there and a much greater percentage of GDP. And this massive level of debt does not just reside with the government, which most pundits would like you to believe. After all, they claim it isn't something we have to worry about, this debt, because the government is on the hook and they can just print money. Now, outside of the negative inflationary implications of printing money, which the Fed cannot do at this time, the debt problem doesn't just lie with the government. It is both in and out of the public sector. For example, total non-financial business debt to GDP has soared to 75.8%. It was, for comparison's sake, 68.7% prior to the global financial crisis. Most importantly, this massive increase in debt, which was a direct result of the most humongous distortion of interest rates in history, led to an unprecedented triumvirate of asset bubbles. They were in bonds, stocks, and real estate, and also ancillary bubbles in things like autos and cryptocurrencies. Did we actually have a bond bubble? I mean, I wrote a book about it in 2013. Well, let's just see. 0% free money interest rates for 10 of the last 14 years in the United States and $17 trillion worth of negative yielding global debt is prima facie evidence for the greatest distortion in borrowing costs ever. That's the bond bubble. Turning to the home real estate market bubble, the home price to income ratio hit a record high that was much higher than previous peak set in 2005. It set that record earlier in 2022. According to Nick Gurley, who made a great appearance on Wealthion and Census Bureau data, there are 99 million single-family homes in the United States. Incredibly, out of that number, there are 13.8 million vacant homes and currently only 719,000 total homes for sale, single-family homes for sale. It would take just 5% of those investors to sell their homes to double the existing homes for sale on the market. Talk about latent inventory. Just 5% of all those 13.8 million homes are sitting vacant. Now, owning an investment home makes a whole heck of a lot of sense when you can rent it out for a really big fat rent, and real estate prices are rising. But in a recession, which is still coming, and I think is already here, when renters, and it's only going to intensify greatly from here, when renters are losing their jobs and home prices begin to fall, it could create a tsunami of for sale signs. I mean, when you're paying a mortgage, paying taxes and maintenance costs on a depreciating asset is an untenable position for an investor. Perhaps most importantly, the bubble in real estate has caused the debt service costs of carrying a mortgage as a percentage of income to reach an all-time high. So, even though mortgage underwriting standards are better than they were leading up to the great real estate bubble, the ability of homeowners to pay their mortgages are just as impaired. And of course, the bubble in equities is epic. The total market capitalization of equities soared to an incredible 200% of GDP. 200% of GDP, twice the underlying economy. For reference, it was 105% prior to 2007, just prior to the great stock market and global financial system meltdowns. If you want to know what is holding up the stock market right now, perhaps you need to look no further than the legacy effects of the largest boost in M2 money supply on record. Of course, we all know M2 money supply is shrinking. It's down 4% year over year. But the gargantuan trends in monetary growth were absolutely staggering leading up to that year ago period. At the start of 2020, the M2 money supply was $15.3 trillion. But by March of 2022, it had shot up to $21.7 trillion. That was an unheard of, unthought of, unfathomable $6.4 trillion or 42% increase in the broad money supply in two freaking years. That is why I think the market is taking a little bit longer for reality to hit. Nevertheless, in spite of that, the inescapable economic gravity associated with the end of multiple trillions of dollars in helicopter money is now in process, but it's a slower process than even I would have thought. For instance, the labor market is absolutely starting to crack. Applications for U.S. unemployment benefits rose to the highest level since October 2021 in the past week. Initial unemployment claims increased by 22,000 to 264,000 in the week ending May 6th. Hence, the jobs market is faltering alongside the economy. The recession is being clearly presaged across the commodity spectrum and financial services sector. Bank stocks and bellwether commodities are in bear markets. In the last 3 months, the regional banking index, KRE, has shed 40% of its value. And for example, lumber is down 20% in the last 3 months. Meanwhile, the benchmark S&P 500 is still up year to date. But the equal weight S&P 500 index isn't up at all. Meanwhile, the broader averages are actually down. Apple alone accounts for 1/3 of the S&P 500's gain for this year, and only a handful of stocks, Microsoft, Nvidia, Facebook, account for the rest. They're all these investors are secluded, cloistered in these few growth NASDAQ stocks, and when that bubble bursts, it's going to be an absolute cratering of prices, not only for these mega caps, but for the averages as a whole. The simple truth is the S&P 500 is still down 15% from its late 2021 high, but for those looking for the full crash to resume, it's going to have to take a little more time. It is for sure coming, but front-running it because of what your feelings are or what you think should be happening. I mean, I viscerally think it should have happened already. But if you notice, if you're with me in the portfolio, we have very few shorts. We have two shorts in the portfolio of very small weightings. I mean, if you invest according to your feelings, it could really harm your retirement plans or what you think should be happening. While we are well-positioned defensively, and I believe correctly so, we are not overly anxious to get aggressively short until the time is right. And our inflation deflation economic cycle strategy is designed to detect when the overall market is on the precipice of panic mode. And then to capitalize on that impending collapse, ex ante, in the major averages and the economy. And then the same process, the same IDEC process, will let us know when the bear market is truly over. And it will get us in the right sectors for what I believe is the unbelievable, epic bout with intractable stagflation. In the meantime, stay cautious, keep aware, and remain patient. Having a proven model helps us do just that.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.